Tonight, we're going to actually continue the discussion of the most common mistakes couples make when dealing with an affair. So, John, why don't you start us off tonight?
You bet. I want to start by welcoming you back to part two of our series, The Road to Recovery. We're going to begin by giving you a quick recap of last week's show and what we covered then. Last week, we talked about the task of telling what has happened, which is basically the task of telling the story of the affair. We also talked about the need to talk about why this has happened. And we also talked about the task surrounding the sense of safety, which included boundaries, how to deal with intrusive thoughts, relapse prevention, and containing anger. And usually there's a lot of anger involved in these situations. And tonight we're going to conclude our discussion of the tasks a couple experiencing infidelity must go through on their road to recovery.
Last week we shared the 10 most common mistakes the betrayed spouse makes. Tonight, before we get started, I'm going to add on 5.
Number 5. Trying to convince your spouse that nobody will ever love them as much as you do.
I've seen people do this over and over, and the truth is, if they're in an emotionally entangled affair, they already think somebody loves them, and they just think that you've lost your mind.
Number 4. Believing that the threat of exposure will be enough to convince them to quit the behavior.
Chances are good more people already know about this affair than you're aware of. Some people may be disapproving, but some people may actually be supportive. It's amazing how often I hear, oh, we just want him to be happy.
Yeah, I find that one in particular to be interesting, because oftentimes the hurt spouse gets really upset simply because people have known about the affair and they actually haven't even told the hurt spouse. And then when they find out or begin to try to expose their mate to what's going on, everybody's going, so what's new? I mean, this was not a surprise to them.
On to number 3. I like this one. Trying to get all the betrayer's friends on your side, hoping that they will help your unfaithful mate to wake up and see reality.
In truth, a lot of their friends probably already have tried to get them to wake up and see the reality, but they're not listening so well. And if you really push this one heavily, and I've seen people do it, you may actually convince their friends that they're right in leaving you and having an affair.
Yeah, one of the most common groups of people that people tend to, I think, try to convince is family members. I don't know if you've seen that one, but mm-hmm. but ultimately they'll try to convince the unfaithful spouse's family that they need to go ahead and really pitch in and pull. And oftentimes for the hurt spouse, that creates a real dilemma. The family really gets caught in a double bind, not knowing who to support, because there's really not a good decision for them at that point. And ultimately, they will typically choose to be with the, or to support the...
Their child.
Their child, right. Thank you. I'm going to get there in a sec.
Number 2, trying to woo your spouse back and expecting instant gratitude and immediate results.
Once again, depending on the type of affair that they've been engaged in, trying to woo them back may be helpful, but they're probably not going to react instantaneously. I've seen people try to do this, and they expect things to be better in a week. Truthfully, it's going to take a while if the betrayer is going to come back.
The only thing I would add to that is it really, like Leslie said, depends on the type of affair. Because if you're dealing with an entangled relationship, you bet, their heart may have already turned away from the marriage and it may be focused some other place. But actually, if you're dealing with a one-night stand, or you're dealing with a sexual addiction, or even sometimes with an inappropriate relationship, sexual or non-sexual, you'll find that they are already are really interested in kind of coming back to the marriage, so that may not be as big a deal.
But it may also not fix the problem of why they were unfaithful.
Right.
And the number one mistake a betrayed spouse makes after infidelity, believing that your unfaithful mate will find you more appealing if you get attention from others.
It's amazing how often we see this, whether it's just flirtation, an inappropriate friendship, or an actual full-blown affair. But a lot of times the person who's hurting feels like they can win their spouse back by getting attention elsewhere. In fact, you are vulnerable to seeking attention. It's not helpful, and it just ends up with a competitive dynamic and doesn't fix a thing.
Exactly right. We want to add anything, Wayne? No.
Well, I was thinking about the second one, the one before the last one. I'm working with a couple that they've both had affairs, and both of them want to speed this process along. And I keep getting, what's next? What's next? What next? What do we expect? What can we expect? And they just want it the here and now. They want it right now. And it's a process. It takes some time to even realize that it's a process and a journey.
Right.
One of the things that's really important in terms of task is you've got to be able to help the other person begin to believe that you understand. It's ultimately that you know what this has cost them, that there is actually a development of empathy. Actually, the empathy works well both directions, even for the hurt spouse to be able to understand what this has cost the unfaithful spouse. One of the terms I use, oftentimes I'll ask a hurt spouse, do you feel like he or she gets what this has done to you? Stephanie tells me that actually get it is a bad term, but I think it's actually pretty good. So we're having some...
What would she say?
Do they understand? That would be her thing. And I'm just kind of thinking that's too clinical or something.
But it is helpful if the unfaithful spouse will initially extend some empathy and try to show some understanding, because the person who's been hurt really has trouble getting past it if they don't believe the person is even trying to understand the pain they've caused.
Right, and so we often have the unfaithful spouse begin by having to write out what things this actually cost their mate. It's really interesting the types of issues that people will come up with. For instance, it's cost them their dreams of how life ought to be, because obviously this is not turning out the right way. In reality, it's costing them their dreams of the husband or the wife they thought they had, because this isn't turning out like they thought. It's cost them sleep at night because they lay awake at night worrying about what's happened. It's cost them happiness because ultimately the unfaithful spouse has made this relationship a very miserable place. And until the unfaithful spouse can actually begin to communicate these specific costs to the hurt spouse, it is really difficult for the hurt spouse to begin to feel safe to come back almost into that relationship. There really needs to be the belief and actually the display by the unfaithful spouse that they do understand. Because until that point in time, one of the things Stephanie used to say to me is, exactly how loud am I going to have to get before you hear me? Which is basically saying, you know, she needed me to understand before it felt like she could let it go and begin to move on into that relationship. And if you're not able to communicate that intense, I think, understanding that you even care and enough to figure out what it's done to them, and you can communicate that, then at that point it doesn't feel safe to come back into the water with them. You guys want to add anything to that?
Sounds good to me, Chief.
Okay, you aren't going to add anything. Wayne, you going to add anything to that? Nope, they're just going to be quiet.
Nope. You're doing great.
Okay, good. Well, then it's probably time for us to move into a commercial break here.
Task number 5 is committing to forgiveness. This is a difficult task. We talk about forgiveness a lot as Christians, but a lot of times we don't talk about what it is. And so I think forgiveness is a process, an event, and a process. And I think up front, it really needs to be, somebody probably needs some paper and a pen, sit down and make a list of the things that they're actually forgiving. And then the event is when, with God at the center of it, they're able to actually let go, kind of like the accounting picture of wiping the slate clean. Then the process afterwards is, if they do something again, or you remember what they've done, you don't dredge it all back up. The problem that happens a lot of times in couples who have experienced infidelity is that the person who is in shock too quickly tells the other person they've forgiven them. They have not, in fact, forgiven you. They've only begun to understand what it is and all the costs to them and what it entails.
Yeah, I think in a lot of Christian circles, a lot of people feel forgiveness is an obligation, so they don't really process it like they need to and take the time that they need to pull it out. Here are one of our favorite definitions for forgiveness, is that forgiveness means abandoning the hope of ever having a better past. Forgiveness is not about forgetting your past, but really getting to a place of peace with it. And that takes time.
And forgiveness is really a gift you give yourself. But we encourage you to take the time with it. Forgiveness is not optional. It's really for you.
But one of the things I notice about forgiveness is that when people fail to forgive, that ultimately they're going to end up being a victim for the rest of their life. I mean, if you really find somebody that has a victim mentality, it always comes down to the fact that they've got resentments that they've continued to harbor, that they've been unable to let go of. And, boy, I'll tell you, there is nothing, I think, hardly more painful than having a betrayal. But there's nothing that's going to be more damaging than the inability to figure out how do you forgive that person so that it doesn't ultimately totally destroy your life as a result of something else that somebody else has done.
And forgiveness isn't giving them permission to have done it, and it's not giving them permission to do it again. It's completely different.
You know, another one of the tasks, the sixth task in the recovery road, is actually about a shared history. One of the things that a couple has to be able to do is begin to see this thing from a common perspective. They've got to be able to, I guess, have an agreement on what was the marriage like and what is the meaning behind this particular affair. Because until they come to that point, you're going to find a bit of an angst between the two of them because they're just not able to see it the same way. Both the affair partner, the meanings, the whys, the wherefores. But this shared history thing is absolutely huge.
Many times.
But the thing that happens in an affair is that there's almost like a wall that's built around the unfaithful person and the affair partner. And some of the goal in sharing the history is so that the wall is built around the marriage, that the affair partner's on the outside because during the affair, the spouse was on the outside.
Yeah, one of the difficult things about the history is sometimes after the betrayed spouse has discovered the infidelity, their whole sense of their marriage history can get totally turned on its head. You know, for example, that perfect trip that he or she thought they took to Disney World with their spouse, they later discover that you know, the unfaithful spouse was text messaging their affair partner while they were on It's a Small World or something, and trying to kind of reconcile all that can be a very, very difficult thing.
And the unfaithful spouse, a lot of times, and we mentioned it last week, I think, doesn't understand necessarily why the hurt spouse needs this information. But when it comes down to it, the hurt spouse needs to know that they're in control of the information. Once again, we really push the 24-hour rule with asking questions. But they need to have a sense of their history with their husband or wife.
But the other piece of the shared history, I think, that's kind of hard is for the unfaithful spouse. Frequently, a hurt spouse may sit there and go, I thought everything in our marriage was just hunky-dory. And all of a sudden, I find out that you've been incredibly unhappy, that you're actually involved in an affair, that you're telling me you've never loved me, that you've been miserable our entire marriage. And they're completely shocked by the revelation of this change. And so at that point, again, we have a very different type of understanding of what this marriage has represented. It's interesting, I think, with women in particular, when they've been really unhappy in a marriage, they'll speak up and they'll complain and they'll let their mate know over and over and over again how unhappy they are. And so eventually when they give up that their husband's ever going to do anything, they'll eventually kind of shut up and they'll quit complaining. And then the poor guy's over there thinking, things finally got better. She finally quit complaining. The point when she quit talking, though, in terms of the marital history, is the point when she began to really check out and totally turn her back on the relationship and actually became very vulnerable to an affair. She just gave up that, you know, this guy was ever going to hear her do anything, and so she shut up. And at that point, they've got a lot of history to rewrite.
Yeah, so guys, if your wife quits complaining, that's not necessarily good.
Yeah, you want to make sure if they quit complaining that they're happy. I think, you know, being able to ask each other, are we satisfied with our marital relationship, is a really important thing to be able to do, because without that, you know, ultimately this thing is going to begin to fall apart. And so that couple will actually have a lot of talking to do. Another aspect of the shared history, and guys, you pitch in here, is the if you've only got 10% of your overall marriage is what you would consider to be good, then there's a better than 90% chance that ultimately you can work this relationship out. At least you know what that looks like. And it only takes 10% of kind of contiguous time. So if you've been married 27 years, you really don't have to have a very long period of time that you would consider relatively good for your marital relationship. So that is actually a really good indicator for you as a couple, if you're thinking about recovering, is has at least 10% of our marriage been good? Okay, we've got somebody on the line here that has a question. Yes, you're live on AR Radio.
Okay, goodness. I just tuned in, so I know you said you didn't give counseling, but I have a particular interesting situation. My husband and I have been married for almost 31 years. We've been separated for 4.5 years. And it wasn't a healthy marriage. And after we separated, we both went back to different churches. And that was the good part. But then a month after we had separated, he went to a high school reunion and met up with somebody and has been having, well, he says they're still just friends, but I'm sure it's an emotional affair after 4.5 years. But will still not, you know, admit to it and keep saying that they're just friends and that he's not committing adultery. And so I'm just kind of stuck here, not knowing, you know, what to do, because I can't really get him to sit and talk with me. I've asked him to just to write me a heart-to-heart note about, you know, what's going on and how he wants to, you know, deal with our situation, and he says he will and then he doesn't. And so I'm just kind of in a bind, because I, you know, in order to divorce, I need you know, kind of a written statement that he's committing adultery, but he says he's not. So, hello?
We're sitting here looking at each other, trying to say, who's gonna field your question?
We're too polite in our response to you. I apologize for that.
I'm not sure what to do.
4.5 years is a long time to be separated.
It is.
Was there a specific reason or purpose behind the separation?
It wasn't healthy, and then some financial stuff. I mean, I started to get phone calls from credit card people and found that that he sort of had a secret life. You know, had a lot of credit cards, some of which were in my name. But it wasn't a healthy marriage. You know, we knew how to play together, but we just didn't deal with real issues. And we did secular counseling, and I realized there wasn't any forgiveness in that. And then really didn't talk about the real issues. But kind of near the end there, we had one of the Christian books to kind of measure where we were in our relationship. And, you know, we were in deep doo-doo. And I was willing to just, you know, to go to counseling and things like that. But I just feel like he has given his heart to her, but he won't divorce, which is the interesting thing. I've said, you know, go ahead and file, and it's like he doesn't want to work on the marriage, but then he doesn't want to divorce.
And it sounds like he doesn't want to admit that what he's doing is wrong either, from what you say.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
If you'll go to our website, affairrecovery.com, we actually list out 5 different types of affairs, and his is actually one of the 5 forms of affairs. We call this not just friends. And a lot of times people will sit there and say, you know, we're not having sex, we're just friends. But you're right, that's definitely an emotional affair. There's actually a book by a lady named Shirley Glass called Not Just Friends. And it is an excellent book, and it addresses this particular issue that you're talking about. Shirley is now dead. I believe she died in 2003. Mm-hmm. Wonderful lady. And her book, however, really addresses this particular issue, and how high school reunions, workplaces, things like that actually are the breeding ground for these sorts of affairs. And even though someone's not having sex, I mean, they certainly, if they're sharing intimate details and information with each other that they're not sharing with their mates, this is an emotional affair, and it's inappropriate. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
It, as far as I'm concerned, it is definitely a betrayal, even if they're not having actual intercourse.
And yeah. An emotional affair can be even more damaging than a sexual affair.
That's what I was going to say, that some women find that even more threatening and more painful than if there had been actual physical contact.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, he doesn't seem to want to admit how much, you know, hurt he's done, not only, you know, to me, but we have a son and she has daughters and just to the, our families, but he just won't allow himself to get on that level, and it's, you know, it's frustrating for me because I feel like I'm stuck.
Well, you might have, see if he will read something like Not Just Friends, if you'll go to our website, I think the second podcast on there talks about the five different types of affairs. If you can get him to listen to that, maybe that would be helpful. Or you can also have him call us here, if y'all are from the Austin area, at 512-346-9299, and maybe he can hook up with one of our therapists, and we'll be able to maybe meet with him if he'd be willing to do that.
Yeah, he's really not interested in going to the counseling. I mean, I had asked him to do that, but I've read books on affairs, an affair of the mind, and
right,
just various ones. So, you know, there's a part of me that wants to believe that they're just friends, and then there's a part of me, you know, that doesn't.
That's a really.
I still want to trust him. I mean, it's terrible, but I still want to trust this person.
There's another website called DearPeggy.com. Have you heard of that?
No,
It is a great resource for somebody like you. She has lots of articles and forums where you can get on there and read about other stories, really, and tons.
I'm just wondering what direction I need to take. I don't know if I need to get in touch with his priest or, I mean, I'm just kind of not sure what to do because I have, you know, read books and articles, and I have always been open to reconciliation, but just for him not to, you know, at first he did want a divorce, and then now when I'm saying go ahead and do it, he won't, and I don't know if I have the heart to do it. I mean, I'm still kind of emotionally hurt.
No, it puts you in a very difficult situation.
It does. It does.
You know, so often you want, you know, we want in recovery to see that the betrayer is willing to be broken and take responsibility for their actions, and he's just kind of keeping you in limbo.
Yeah. Oh, just to have some closure, you know,
yeah.
Closure on the whole thing, and that's what I said, you know, let's at least have some closure on this. I mean, you know, here we've been married this long and have all these memories, and but now I really can't even get him to talk to me over the phone. I'll leave a message and he'll leave a message. So, and, you know, will not get in, you know, meet me face to face at all. So,
it really sounds like he's told you he wants a divorce, but he's not going to tell you to your face.
Well, no, he has said that, but earlier, you know, I was the one who said, oh, let's not divorce. And then a couple of years ago, I said, well, okay. And, you know, I even went and got the papers and gave them to him. And I said, okay, go ahead. And then nothing, absolutely nothing.
No, and it's a tough call to make. And my dear wife sitting next to me is often fond of saying that there's really only one reason to get a divorce, and that's because God's telling you to, and only one reason not to get a divorce, and that's because God's telling you to. Mm-hmm. And so the task is really to kind of separate yourself from your emotions enough to be able to discern what you're being called to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he's really not willing to be broken or really willing to come to terms with his behaviors, you know, it's something to really look at.
And we ask you, again, we would invite you to come to the website, affairrecovery.com, and maybe we can give some sort of direction. You can find some help there at that point.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you
for calling.
Program.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Goodbye.
So we're up against a break. Welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio. we are so glad that you've joined us here tonight, and we are really looking forward to your calls. I hope that you'll honor us by going ahead and giving us a call. We would like to be able to help you on this journey if we can. So, for this next segment, we're going to be talking about marital vision and kind of what that's going to be about. I mean, ultimately, one of the things that couples have to be able to develop for the two of them, if they're going to continue in this relationship, just like with our previous caller, I think that they really don't have a vision for what would happen for them as a couple for the future. And couples that actually go through recovery actually begin to develop that common vision where they begin to see what could be in the future, and they redevelop goals as they come back together of where they want to go. And ultimately, I believe there's almost a transformation of the loss that's occurred as a result of the betrayal, that they feel like somehow God comes in and literally gives them a purpose and a meaning, a way that he can use this in their lives. And if a couple doesn't come to that point, then it's really difficult for them to begin to decide to be back together again. I don't know if any of you guys have any thoughts on that.
Well, I was just going to add that a lot of times people want to go back. You can't go back. You can only go forward. And in going forward, you really need to develop a vision of how this is going to look. Why is it going to be different? And what will I get out of it?
Right. The task is not to go back and sort of reconstruct the rubble of the marriage, but to create something new, or allow God to create something entirely new in your relationship.
But you can't do it unless you're willing to go back down to ground zero.
So, yeah, the next task we're going to talk about a little bit is reclaiming identity. And people have gone through infidelity, you know, it can absolutely rock your sense of yourself. It can rock your roles in the marriage, and really even your sense of who you are to God.
Yeah. When your life blows up, I mean, the person who's been betrayed loses their sense of who they are as a spouse, potentially who they are as a parent. You know, they're no longer the happy couple sitting in church. Their idea of who they've been is really up for grabs, and it's confusing, it's disorienting, and for people to really be able to recover and go on, they need to learn how they're going to reclaim their identity, figure out who they are, develop new roles, and see themselves really through God's eyes ultimately, that our restoration of our identity is from God.
Yeah, I think the same thing is true for the betrayer. You know, that they've got to work through that process and really come to see who they are, not as a betrayer. I think I was thinking, as you were saying that, Leslie, about Jesus working with the prostitute. I don't think Tony Campolo said this. He said, you know, Jesus never talked to a prostitute. He talked to a woman that struggled with prostitution. And I think there's a difference where you step up out of addictions or whatever, and you become to see yourself as the man of God or the woman of God that you really are, that you were created to be.
Yeah, in the past, I think it was easy. We've certainly began to see this both with men and women who have been betrayed, but it's also like Wayne saying, the unfaithful spouse of, how do you recapture your masculinity or your femininity after you feel like someone else has had your mate? We've seen some really interesting things that men have done. I've certainly seen men who have wanted to go kill the other person kind of as a way of reestablishing things. In the olden days, it was pretty simple. I mean, we had something that was socially acceptable called dueling, you know? And so if you were man enough to get a pistol, take 10 paces, turn around and fire, it really didn't make any difference what the outcome was. Ultimately, you demand. Anybody who's willing to do that, you know, they've got big brass ones. And for that,
really, the point we're trying to make is there are a lot of destructive ways that people try to reclaim their masculinity, their femininity. Ultimately, you know, we're all made in God's image, male and female, and God can restore that. But yeah, we've seen people man up or woman up by having affairs, and that's never a helpful thing.
Now, and we don't particularly recommend the dueling gig either, because that can be hazardous to your health.
Or at least get you into jail.
Right, and sometimes you do it through fighting, you can do it through, I mean, there's lots of ways. So really, one of the things you're going to have to work out is how in the world do I begin to feel good about myself again as a man or as a woman, as a result of what's happened here, I mean, I've got to figure out a way to feel good about myself again.
And don't you think it's really the abiding life that you talk about, Rick? I mean, it's the nearness of Jesus that's really ultimately going to do that.
Right. I don't know that there's anything short of beginning to understand my identity in Christ that begins to help me feel good about who I am. Our culture tells us that oftentimes who we are and what we are, we're acceptable by how we look, our body make, our intelligence, or whatever. And ultimately, it is about Christ and Christ alone. So I agree with that. Okay, so we're starting to head off to a break here. And welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio, Radio to the Power of God. And actually, we have a caller on the line right now, so let's go ahead and take the call.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. I've been married for 27 years. In this case, I'm the betrayer. I'm the one who was unfaithful. My wife served me with divorce papers about a year and a half ago, and at that point, God got my attention. He led me to repentance. I've experienced His true forgiveness, and after staying together for about a year, we're still not divorced, but separated. My wife was still unable to live together. She asked me to move out, and I did about 4 months ago. Now, my wife has recognized that I have changed. In fact, she's told friends that. But there's nothing left there. And recently, in a discussion with her, when I'd asked her to attend an event with me, she said no, and I asked why. And she told me there needs to be more distance between us. I guess my question is, is there anything I can do to help her along the way towards reconciliation or recommitment?
I guess one of the questions I would have for you is, have you been able to get from her why it is that she thinks more distance would be helpful to her?
Not yet. That's one of those things I need to ask her. I just heard that last week, but I haven't asked further about that.
Yeah, because, and so you have been listening to us some on the radio?
Right.
Yeah, because I think up front, you know, I don't know where she is in dealing with the train wreck. I don't know if she thinks that you have begun to try to understand what your infidelity has cost her. And, you know, just as a side note here, I'm so thankful that you found God in all of this.
Oh, that's the only way. Earlier you talked about trying to understand where, I guess, her position as to the feelings that I put her through. And I've really tried in that way, sitting down trying to put on paper costs, just as you suggested there. But I still get the comment that I'll never understand what I've put her through. And quite frankly, I'm sure she's right. I can try as much as I can, but I don't know if I'll get there.
I think just the fact that you're trying so hard and sort of adopting that whatever it takes kind of attitude is going to go a long way. Were you going to say something, Rick?
No, I think that I appreciate what you're saying there.
Well, and does she have other women in her life who have been through a similar experience?
At the time, right now, I don't think she's talking to anyone.
Yeah, because it sounds like she's really isolating herself and withdrawing, which is just a concern in and of itself. I, in my first marriage, was the person who was betrayed. And I had a lot of friends who really, really loved me and cared about me, but it was really hard because nobody knew what it was like to be in my shoes.
Right.
And I just think one of the most helpful things for somebody who's been betrayed is to be around other women who have been betrayed, because I can tell a woman till I'm blue in the face, you know, this isn't necessarily about you or how you're flawed or screwed up, but there's nothing like that woman being able to look at another woman and go, wow, she's really pretty, she's really intelligent. Maybe it really isn't about me, because the sense of rejection can be really profound after a betrayal.
So best would be to try to get her involved with other women instead of isolating.
That's one of the things that I would recommend right up front.
Any suggestions? Obviously, she's not following my suggestions these days.
I know that Leslie runs a group called Harboring Hope at our offices. We can be reached again at 512-346-9299, and that is often a very helpful group for wives if they can get involved in that, if they're willing to do some work.
Okay.
Yeah, part of the grieving process for a wife who's been betrayed is just that it's a very lonely, isolating kind of grief. They have a hard time, you know, finding people to talk to. It's like when someone dies in your family, people are bringing casseroles by the house and people are rallying around you. But
sure.
But a wife who doesn't have that kind of connection with other women, sometimes it can sort of pull into to herself in her grief.
Yeah, I think you're actually talking about what our last segment is about, which was supposed to be recommitment. I don't know if, Leslie, you want to add anything about the whole stage of recommitment at this point.
Well, when I'm working with particularly the betrayed spouse, I think it's important for them to be able to go on to recommit. First of all, they need to recommit to God, because a lot of times they're looking at their spouse trying to figure out, is this person safe enough for me to be with? And I think the first step for them is maybe not necessarily to trust you yet, but to trust God with you. And that as they're able to trust God with you, trust God with their future, that they are able to recommit to God and seeing life a little bit differently in spite of the pain that they've been through, maybe even having the hope that God can use this for something good in their life.
But we really appreciate your courage in calling tonight. It's a tough thing to do, and wish you all the best in what's going on with your wife right now.
And encourage you to not give up.
Yeah, just continue to pray for her. You know, there's nothing the nearness of God will not heal. And, you know, you just hang close with the Lord, and let's see what happens in this situation.
And I suspect there's some other listeners out there who are going to be praying for you now, too.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Great
the main show. Thing yeah, is, yeah, you can't fix it. You just have to be patient and loving. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Bruce. Bye-bye. Well, I think that's bringing us close to the end of tonight's program. Certainly, for those of you who are in the midst of crisis, we want to invite you to come to our website, affairrecovery.com. We do have an EMS weekend coming up, and if you're in crisis, this particular one is filling up quickly, and we've only got a few spots left, but we would certainly encourage you to give us a call and try to get into that before it's totally gone at this point. Anything you guys want to add as we're closing out on the task tonight?
I guess just to remember that there's always hope. There's nothing that God can't do.
Absolutely. You just never want to lose sight of that. Even it can feel pretty dark and hopeless in the middle of this struggle, but God is there.
And we've seen so many couples come through it, and a year from the point of betrayal say, wow, I would never want to go through that again. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. But it's the best thing that ever happened to me.
Absolutely. We just, you know, we couldn't do this job if we didn't see the hope and the restoration on the other side of it.
And if any of you do need some individual counseling or couples counseling, please call us at Crossroads Counseling at area code 512-346-9299. That would be for individual counseling. And you can reach the Affair Recovery Center again at our toll-free number, which is 1-888-527-2367. 1-888-527-2367.
So thanks for joining us.
Good night.
God bless.
Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?